By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
As the U.S. economy weakens and interest rates continue to rise, commercial real estate borrowers will increasingly have trouble refinancing. That said, some types of properties are better situated than others. I'm Aaron Johnson, and this is Moody's Talks, Securitization Spotlight. In today's episode, our new real estate researcher, Daryl Wheeler, will join us for the first time to discuss the prospects of various types of commercial real estate amid rising rates and economic deterioration. But before we get started, I'd like to encourage our listeners, if you have not already, to subscribe to Securitization Spotlight and to also check out some of our other monthly podcasts, like Focus on Finance, which brings you insights you need to keep on top of developments in the banking, insurance, and asset management sectors. And with that, let's get started. Daryl, thanks for joining me this month.
Great to be here, Aaron.
So risks are rising across most structured finance sectors, but within the commercial real estate sector, CMBS specifically, it's not necessarily a cut and dry story of just risks rising all over the place. But with that said, to get us started, could you do your best attempt at giving us a high level breakdown of the dynamics at work in the commercial real estate sector going forward?
For us, it's really going to depend on your perspective. So we have to look at the Moody's Economic Board, which is called for a recession this year. And if you're having a recession, you should look at the property fundamentals. And if you were to look at the supply that's been delivered over the last few years, you would get a little concerned about industrial and multifamily, and yet they have low vacancy. You'd probably be a little more concerned about the office market, where we've seen some negative absorption recently in the last 18 months after COVID, well ahead of whatever recession's hitting. So it's starting, if we have a recession, with a higher vacancy rate.
So on top of those recessionary concerns, we've got a rising rate environment that is also making it a little bit more difficult on properties.
So that's what we would combine it with, is how rates have been rising. And last year, if you were following rates, they really moved up in the second quarter and challenged properties' abilities to refinance. That was actually a 300 basis point move. CMBS mortgages are 10-year mortgages. So if you went back 10 years, the rates they would have typically been carrying were 5 or 6%. That remains true now. So if you have to refinance into what had become a 6 or 7% interest rate and you were a struggling mortgage, you had some challenges last year. And we did see some defaults and resolution activities. Looking into 2023 and CMBS conduit loans, there are $29 billion of mortgages that we're tracking. And if you looked within those, there is $6.7 billion that currently don't have an 8% debt yield. And debt yield is important. It's the amount of cash flow you have divided by the balance of the loan. So you should think of it as the cash flow you have available to make principal and interest payments. And so to the extent that there are $6.7 billion that don't have that and they're coming due this year, we're going to be tracking those mortgages very carefully as we go through the year. And then in 2024, the number increases a little further as well. So there's still a lot of monitoring activity for us to perform.
Got it. That's interesting. And to take a quick step back, to be clear, delinquencies have been falling really since the peak of the pandemic for most major property types. But we're saying that could change going into 2023.
CMBS delinquency rates have been recovering from COVID when they spiked out, reaching almost 8% in August of 2020. Since that time, they've been recovering as the borrowers got some forbearance and some other aspects that let them get through this. But in recent months, we've had just over $700 million in delinquencies resolved every month as we move away from COVID-19. It is getting more difficult for servicers to resolve mortgages as the easy resolutions have taken place. As we go into 2023, we have that $6.7 billion of challenged maturities that don't have the 8% debt yield. That could be adding $500 million each month to the delinquency count. So at some point, the delinquencies should start to outweigh the resolutions in 2023. And if you throw in a recession, it could happen and be a large increase. In the most recent month, it went up by 0.1 or so. You know, it could bounce around at this level for a bit, but eventually it should start to go up if we're in a recession.
So that was kind of a breakdown of the conduit transactions, which are backed by a bunch of different loans on different properties. What about the single asset, single borrower deals, which tend to be backed by one property, one loan that is stronger, more trophy type?
Yeah, traditionally the investor has preferred to look at a single asset as transparent. They are usually compelling stories, as you say, a trophy asset. But I would also point out that we've seen a lot more leverage on those assets in recent times. So today's SASB, as we call them, single asset, single borrower deal, is not necessarily what we had before the last great recession. So we do expect, with some of these deals having collateral that's rated as low as B-, that we will see some defaults if we have that recession that our macroeconomic board's calling for this year.
Got it. Thanks for that kind of high-level breakdown. And as I teased before, there is significant differences between the properties types. So let's get into those a little bit, as some are more vulnerable to economic downturns than others.
From that standpoint, if you're having an economic downturn, you've got to assume you're losing jobs. And if we're losing jobs, that's less real estate being used. So we do tend to follow how job loss is translated into lower revenues for the five different property types. And if you were to go back over time, you can make some assumptions that if you lost 1% employment in the coming year, which is not unreasonable, you could see hotels lose 9.4% of their revenues on a national basis. Office would be the one that would be hit second hardest. It would lose about 3%, understanding that the leases protect them in somewhat. And then the other property types would lose some revenues too. So less... there's no way to fight it. If you have a recession, you're going to see lower revenues. And that's really the biggest concern for us, more than even the rate environment. And so we're watching the various properties and seeing which ones could be really exposed to that.
But hotels and retail have done fairly well from an NOI perspective.
Yeah, they've definitely had an upward recovery from COVID-19. We're expecting that to even continue with a bit of a recession. So understand I'm using 20 years of data in my analysis. And in fact, if I have some momentum, a sector can fight that for a period of time. So you could still very well have a strong or reasonable performance in the hotel and retail sectors, especially with hotels still recovering somewhat in the gateway cities and from increased business travel. So they still have some recovery runway to run, I believe. So yeah, that's true. But, you know, if we're into a recession, which we're calling to be short, and it's starting to look longer, then we're going to start to look at those sectors, and that momentum will start to sap.
All right. So hotels are still recovering from the pandemic.
There's no question that we've seen very high demand. You're seeing certainly the areas that are resort-based perform very well, but a lot, and the average RevPAR is now higher than it was in 2019, but there's still several markets that haven't fully come back that we expect have some further recovery to achieve. And you think of gateway cities such as New York and San Francisco and Seattle, where they're very much, if you see business travel pick up, you could see some improvement in those numbers. But again, as I've stressed, it is the most sensitive to employment loss. So if we started to see this employment loss take place and affect the business environment, those numbers may never show. But right now, it's looking reasonably good.
Right. But to emphasize that, given leisure travel is driving the hotel recovery, if a recession does hit and consumers do pull back on their planned vacations, we could see delinquencies inch up again.
Yeah, no. And understand I'm talking revenues when I talk about the relationship between jobs. If you look at the margin as well, hotels have one of the bigger or tighter margins of all the products. So it can go in a recession to a negative carry pretty quick.
Okay, moving on to office, which has been a big topic of late. We've written a lot about it. Work from home remains popular post-pandemic, and we think it's here to stay. How is that affecting office going forward and in light of a potential recession?
Yeah, so we've been tracking a variety of different metrics for seeing how many people are back into the office. And it's still continuing to evolve, and it's improving. So from that standpoint, We do believe hybrid work is popular, but we're starting to get a sense that people are definitely in the office 2 days a week, if not 3 days a week. You're hearing that they don't like to do the hoteling, so only certain industries are going to be able to hotel. And so if you've got the space occupied 2 or 3 days a week and fully occupied, it's getting tough to really save more than 10 or 20% of your space. Yet, so far, we've seen the potential recession and technology companies looking to save money really create space, and that affected San Francisco. And now we're starting to see job cuts in other areas, which will start to impact the demand for office. So from that standpoint, we expect that the recession will probably outweigh the immediate impact that we see from hybrid work.
Now, are there specific office markets that we should be paying attention to when it comes to CMBS? Obviously, a big one is New York City, but I know there's others out there that we need to watch.
The big one for exposure is New York City, and we follow that pretty carefully. When you start doing these comparisons of employment and performance, the scope of industry within a city plays a fairly large role. So New York has a fairly diversified employment base, but it is weighted towards finance. The ones that really can get hit in this type of recession are the ones that have specific weightings to industries such as San Francisco, where you have a large concentration of technology companies. And so when I say the recession will weigh on that, the one thing we are seeing is a lot of the tech companies had brought on headcount during post-COVID times where they are kind of easily able to slash that as they realize they should focus on money-generating tasks. So we are seeing some headcount reductions in certain cities that have driven up the vacancy rate as sublet space was put onto the market. And San Francisco is definitely the market we're following because the amount of vacancy change over the last 2 years is over 11%. Most other cities are like 6 or 7%, but there in particular, they just seem to have tipped over the edge to where the asking rents are dropping and the effective rents are also dropping. So it will vary by market, but there's a lot to monitor there. And obviously for CMBS, we'll see how that translates into performance.
Where do we see more exposure to San Francisco? Would that be kind of the single asset, single borrower deal or the more conduits?
Well, luckily for CMBS, there's not a lot of overall exposure to San Francisco. In what Moody's rates, I think we only have one or two SASBs there. And then overall, if you had to pick the larger markets for CMBS conduit exposure, it really is New York first and then LA. And then you kind of get in, you would throw in San Francisco along with Atlanta and Miami and Washington and Boston type exposure. So it's there, but it's not horrendously large.
All right. You had mentioned office and hotel, which were two of the big three hit by the pandemic, the other being retail. Could you go into some detail there?
Retail has had a strong recovery from COVID. There hasn't been a lot of construction in the last more than a decade, honestly, if you look at the fundamental data. It does have one of the bigger loss severities, but its performance continues to improve. And in a report we do called the Red, Yellow, Green Property Fundamental Report, retail is our highest ranked property type. So we still expect that it's got some room to perform and surprise people in the coming period. We are hearing that validated by some recent leasing information we've been seeing. So while post-holidays, we've had some major store closings, and expect some more. And as the consumer's been coming back and shifting from their COVID mode, where they ordered most things online, the stores have been looking to increase their store counts. So it could be, as you were suggesting earlier, a different thing from our sort of simple less jobs equals less revenues. But, you know, that will be tough to fight, but retail will actually have a good chance to surprise a little on the upside here, we think.
All right. Well, thanks for that that sector breakdown of the stuff we're paying attention to for negatives. What are some sectors we're more bullish on, where we have more bullish outlooks?
Well, if you look to the Moody's Red, Yellow, Green report, it surprises many, but retail is one of the better ones for us. along with multifamily. So both of those should stand up pretty well to a recession, along with the industrial because it has longer term leases and currently a low vacancy rate. Now, if the recession becomes longer, then all of those property types obviously will be affected and to various extents. So, you know, people generally count on multifamily seeing rental growth. In the last couple of years, it's had extremely high rental growth. We don't expect anything like that's going to continue, but it would be surprising for rents to decrease. It's more likely to be impacted by inflation hitting the expense side of the income statement for those borrowers. And so we're watching inflation a bit.
Now, a lot of that multifamily exposure comes in the form of CRE CLOs, right?
In the last few years, it's been easy to place a CRE CLO if you've got a high concentration of multifamily, and it does tend to price based upon the concentration. Those stories are usually where the borrower has to convert to a higher rent and renovate the place. So there is some risk to it there that they may not execute their plan. But in general, managing and doing those sort of transitional loans for multifamily should have more stability than if you've done them with the other products. So yeah, you see a lot of it in CRE CLOs. You see there's also the GSEs have their own programs. And then the CMBS market gets its share as well.
Got it. And to our listeners, if you're looking for more in-depth breakdown of fundamentals about various property segments within commercial real estate, definitely encourage you to check out our Red, Yellow, Green reports, which I believe publish quarterly, right?
Yep, we just put one out in December. And, you know, it gives a very good near-term view of what's going to happen. It looks at what new supply is coming on in the next 12 months and compares that to what the expected demand is.
Before I let you go, I do want to see if you can comment a little bit on, I teased this before, but talk a little bit more in depth on how high interest rates have affected cap rates and property valuations going into the next year.
High interest rates have had a variety of impacts. The largest one is when these borrowers had their mortgages mature, they didn't have enough cash flow to refinance. We saw a lot of them forced to cash in. And then, you know, based on the issuance we've seen where the cap rates have sometimes been lower than the actual cost of debt that they have, which they can do because they aren't levered against the whole property. But in a general sense, as you see these properties come in, we have seen cap rates edging out, which has decreased value somewhat. We expect that will continue this year. And, you know, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we had very low rates for a long time there.
A lot of good insight there to a big, huge securitization market.
Yeah, appreciate being here, Aaron. Chat again soon.
And to our listeners, a reminder to subscribe and pass us along to your friends and coworkers. We look forward to having you back for next month's edition of Securitization Spotlight.
Thanks for listening to this Moody's Talks podcast. To find out more about the topics discussed, please follow the links in the show notes. You can check out other Moody's Talks podcasts by visiting moodys.com/podcasts.